Good morning. Whoever you are, wherever you come from, whoever you love, we welcome you. I am Saul Flanner. I'm joined this morning by Kathy Walker. Lay-led services are a time-honored Unitarian Universalist tradition. We believe that the Sunday service is best reflected in a variety of voices and experiences. We hope you find something in the service today that nourishes your spirit and helps you to find and keep your balance.
Today's chalice lighting is from The Tao of Poo by Benjamin Hoff. Lots of people talk to animals. Not very many listen, though. That's the problem.
I am a gamer. And just to clarify, just so no one gets confused, when I say I'm a gamer, I am not talking about sports. You might have already guessed that I'm not a huge sports fan. But to further clarify, when I say I'm a gamer, I'm also not talking about video or computer games, although I like those too. And I'm not talking about board games, although I like those too. When I say I'm a gamer, I'm talking about role-playing games. If you're not familiar with the term, you're not alone. But you might be more familiar with the most famous of all role-playing games, Dungeons and Dragons, a world of high fantasy and magic similar to Tolkien's Lord of the Rings. That's right, in real life, I'm a pacifist. But when I can find the time and a group willing to play, I enjoy swinging a battle axe or hurling a fireball into an onrushing horde of orcs or zombies or maybe even a dragon or two. Not for real, of course. It's all pretend. And that's the best part. Because when you're playing a role-playing game, the real action isn't taking place on a sports field or a computer screen or on a game board or even on a piece of paper. The real action is up here, in your imagination. Because when you can imagine, that's a whole different kind of magic. And that's one of the things Kathy and I are trying to teach our daughter, Kailani. Kathy doesn't share my passion for fantasy role-playing, but she does share my passion for imaginative play. See that blanket on the floor? That's not a blanket. It's a boat. And Kailani is the captain, sailing her animal friends through turbulent seas in search of dolphins and fireworks and hidden treasure. That box of Duplos isn't just a pile of plastic blocks. It's a zoo. And Kailani, with the help of her friends, Zookeeper Molly and Buzz Lightyear, drives the train on endless tours of the facility, pointing out the giraffe and the lion and the elephant as she passes, making sure each animal has enough to eat and a comfortable place to sleep. I love listening to Kathy and Kailani play together. And, truth be told, I'm a little bit jealous. Because for this kind of play, Kathy has become the clear favorite. For now. I'm eagerly anticipating the day when Kailani will be old enough to tell the difference between an orc and a goblin, and ideally be able to describe appropriate combat tactics for each. Until then, I'm going to enjoy listening to her and her mother and her stuffed animals, and to the excitement in their voices as they describe their marvelous adventures. I hope you will too. Come, let us worship together. Please join me now in the spirit of prayer. Spirit of life, spirit of love, God of hidden treasures and secret hiding places, Lord of exuberant laughter, and the massive temper tantrum. Protector of pirates and princesses, great guardian of the blanket fort, keeper of the last days of summer vacation, be with us here in this sacred place. Be with those who are suffering, that they may find solace. Be with those who are joyous, that their joy may be a beacon to others. Most of all, be with those of us who quite honestly have a little trouble believing that you are real. Help us to imagine. Imagine the world the way a child can. A world big enough to hold endless possibilities. A world small enough for us to see the hope that binds us together. A world where life, love, and joy are valued above all else. Because that is a world worth imagining. Amen. Our reading today is an excerpt from The Velveteen Rabbit by Marjorie Williams. The skin horse had lived longer in the nursery than any of the others. He was so old that his brown coat was bald in patches and showed the seams underneath. And most of the hairs in his tail had been pulled out to string bead necklaces. He was wise, for he had seen a long succession of mechanical toys arrive to boast and swagger, and by break their mainsprings and pass away. And he knew that they were only toys and would never turn into anything else. For nursery magic is very strange and wonderful, and only those playthings that are old and wise and experienced, like the skin horse, understand all about it. "What is real?" asked the rabbit one day when they were lying side by side near the nursery fender before Nana came to tidy the room. "Does it mean having things that buzz inside you and a stick-out handle?" "Real isn't how you are made," said the skin horse. "It's a thing that happens to you." When a child loves you for a long, long time, not just to play with, but really loves you, then you become real. "Does it hurt?" asked the rabbit. "Sometimes," said the skin horse, for he was always truthful. "When you are real, you don't mind being hurt." "Does it happen all at once, like being wound up?" he asked, "or bit by bit?" "It doesn't happen all at once," said the skin horse. "You become. It takes a long time. That's why it doesn't happen often to people who break easily or have sharp edges or have to be carefully kept. Generally, by the time you are real, most of your hair has been loved off and your eyes drop out and you get loose in the joints and very shabby." "But these things don't matter at all, because once you are real, you can't be ugly, except to people who don't understand." "I suppose you are real," said the rabbit, and then he wished he had not said it, for he thought the skin horse might be sensitive. But the skin horse only smiled. "The boy's uncle made me real," he said. "That was a great many years ago. But once you are real, you can't become unreal again. It lasts for always."
This morning for this hymn number 395, we're going to create a healing song circle. So I'm going to stand in the center of the circle, and if we'll all turn together to be a huddle in order to experience the healing song circle. Now, in order to be a part of a healing song circle, all you have to do is be in the circle somewhere. So find your place and let's sing together.
Sing and rejoice, let all things live.
every time I start to write a sermon, I have the strongest urge to begin it with the same six words. I have a confession to make. In fact, I did start a sermon that way 7 years ago, and since then, those words have become a mantra each time I prepare another sermon. Maybe because every sermon I write, and those that Saul has written too, seem a bit confessional to me. Of course, as this thought emerged, I had to consult the dashboard dictionary on my laptop. Confession generally refers to a formal statement admitting that one is guilty of a crime. An acknowledgement that one has done something that one is ashamed or embarrassed about. Or a formal admission of one's sins with repentance and desire for absolution. I thought back to my prior sermons. Have I ever confessed to a crime? I don't think so. Acknowledge something I'm ashamed or embarrassed about? Maybe. The confession I opened with 7 years ago acknowledged I was an atheist who loved singing hymns. I suppose there might have been some embarrassment in admitting that, but no shame, not really. So then, have I ever made a formal admission of my sins with repentance and the desire for absolution? My sins. Now that's something to think about. Have I ever confessed my sins in a sermon? There's a slim volume Saul and I bought not long after we joined the UU Church of Kent in 2002. It's called 100 Questions That Non-Members Ask About Unitarian Universalism. One of the questions asks how UUs regard sin. The answer is in four sentences. The first sentence focuses on what we don't believe, the doctrine of original sin. The second sentence suggests we believe people are punished by their sins, not for them. In other words, people have to live with the evil they've done. The third sentence isn't about sin at all, but about wanting to do good to make the world a better place. But my favorite is the fourth sentence. You could attend a UU church for years and seldom hear the word sin. Sin, sin, sin. It's possible I've said the word more times this morning than I've heard it uttered in the 11 years we've been attending this church. Further down in the dictionary entry for confession, there are two more definitions: a humorous, intimate revelation about a person's private life, and a statement setting out essential religious doctrine or one's principles. Okay, now we're getting somewhere. These sound like things I've done in a sermon. Intimate revelations, check. Essential religious principles, check. This sermon will include more of those, but possibly, for the first time ever, I'm also going to confess my sins. With repentance, of course, and the desire for absolution. To recap, I have a confession to make. Several, actually. Some of these confessions may be intimate revelations, some may reflect essential religious principles, and some may be my sins. I'll leave it up to you to decide which confessions are which. This is my first confession. I love my mother-in-law. No, really, I like her too. She's smart. She loves good books. She likes to travel. She makes great lists. She's raised two wonderful men. And she lights up when my daughter enters the room. I seriously love that about her. When I tell people my in-laws are going to be moving from Kansas to Ohio and will be living just a few blocks away from us, there's always this pause in which they try to ascertain if that's a good thing or not. I am quick to reassure them just how good I think it will be. I love that my daughter will be able to walk to Yeye and Nainai's house from our home to get to know them like I got to know my dad's parents. For those of you who haven't heard us explain, Ye Ye and Nai Nai are Mandarin for paternal grandfather and grandmother. That's something else I love about my mother-in-law. When we brought our daughter home from China, Helen asked us if Kailani could call them Ye Ye and Nai Nai. Saul's mom rarely asks us for anything, and this request was such an easy one for us to fulfill. We were delighted. We video chat with Saul's parents quite often, so despite the current distance between us, Kailani has gotten to know her grandparents fairly well. They're also very good about sending her little surprises in the mail. My mother-in-law often sends a variety of items in her packages, primarily clothes and stickers, but also books and toys and Band-Aids. We don't always give Kailani everything right away, even if she's the one opening the box. I've gotten pretty good at steering her away from some of the contents because I like to spread out the surprises. I used this skill recently when opening one of Nai Nai's packages, and that brings me to my next confession. These cats. They were among the many toys and dolls collected by Saul's maternal grandmother, and Helen thought Kailani might like to have them after Martha passed away. And Kailani probably would. But I confess, it's as if this toy was made specifically to creep me out. One, they're cats. Two, they're cats who belong to Barbie. Barbie. Three, they're cats wearing sunglasses. Four, their heads bobble. And none of those complaints include the packaging. So, I have not given Kailani these cats. They remain in their box. I tell myself I'm holding on to them until one of those moments when they're really needed, when I can't bring myself to play boat or zoo one more time, when the stickers or Play-Doh or foamies just aren't cutting it anymore, when I think I might hurt myself if I have to listen to Dora sing about being an explorer one single moment longer. But the truth is, I'm not sure that moment will ever get here, not if the alternative is opening that pink box. And I feel guilty. Not only were the cats a gift from Kailani's beloved Nai Nai, they were handed down from Kailani's great-grandmother, a dear woman who loved spending time with Kailani despite having limited opportunities to do so before she died last year. I have another confession to make. Those are not the reasons I feel guilty. Those are the reasons I should feel guilty. I actually feel guilty because I think it's entirely possible those cats got their hopes up traveling from Kansas to Ohio. Thinking, finally, finally, we're gonna have another owner, someone to play with us. This is going to be wonderful. It's been several weeks now, and I imagine they're feeling pretty disappointed in their new life with Kailani. And it's my fault. I know it's not rational to believe toys have thoughts and feelings beyond what we give them, but I'm not always rational. Maybe that surprises some of you. Maybe not. I've been known to apologize to a toy when I've stepped on it, cry over a toy abandoned in a hotel room, or even whisper a prayer of safety when taping up a box of donated toys, my way of saying goodbye to them. Go in peace to another home, to other children. May you find love there. Even as I make these overtures to the plush animals and Duplo figures in my daughter's possession, my rational side forces me to shake my head in disbelief, as if my apologies, my tears, my whispered prayers were nonsense. They're just toys. But consider this. What if they're not just toys? I mean, I know they are. But what if they're not? They're plastic and metal and wood and felt and stuffing, but what if they're also real? It's not as if I'm the only one who's ever asked this question. Whether life is only breathed into the toys a child really loves, or a special magic brings the toys to life, or a vivid imagination makes life possible for toys, these stories and others provide a kind of cultural heritage from which my own beliefs about toys have emerged. And the common theme is love. Real isn't how you are made, said the skin horse. It's a thing that happens to you. When a child loves you for a long, long time, not just to play with, but really loves you, then you become real. 5 years ago, I shared a picture of a bird with this congregation, called her Eunice, and explained that I believed what other people call God is really what's inside each of us, our own souls, our vital essence, what makes you, you. You're Eunice, I said. I acknowledge that not every person will see a bird in the scribble, but for me, that bird is soaring and its name is Eunice. And she's what makes each of us real, with a capital R. Whether you call her God or Eunice or soul or love, she is inside each of us. But get this. If you believe in the skin horse, that means my Eunice depends on your love, and your Eunice depends on mine. We're interdependent. And I confess, that's a scary thought to me, because frankly, I'm not always good at loving you. I don't want to be responsible to each and every person under the sun, to love all of you, to help make you real, to give you soul. Why is it so easy for me to extend that kindness to the toys in my home? Well, duh, they're only alive when I'm not in the room. Loving people is a whole lot harder because they insist on interacting with you, and not always in ways you like. And guess what? According to our seventh principle, it's not just the people we have to love to help make real. It's the animals, the plants, the earth itself. That's right. As a UU congregation, we affirm and promote respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. According to the Unitarian Universalist Association, this can be translated simply to mean we care for the earth. And the curriculum that teaches our children about this principle, quote, helps them to understand that our actions affect every living thing on our planet, including ourselves, end quote. Wow. Every living thing on our planet, including ourselves. That's a lot of responsibility. Responsibility. Not an easy word even to say, also not an easy one to teach. In our home, Kailani's plush toys are part of the family. All three of us are helping to make them real by loving them. In other words, we each do our part to take responsibility for their Eunice. Kailani doesn't have an especially strong attachment to any single animal friend, but she has affection for a lot of them and remembers all of their names. Some of her plush toys receive more of her attention than others. We often use those that are not as well loved to teach Kailani to be inclusive. When she was about 18 months old, I liked to lead a circle time for her and her animal friends. We'd gather her plush toys in a circle, making a space for each of them, and I'd tell a story or sing a few songs. One of the animals often available for circle time was Red Bull. But for whatever reason, Kailani never wanted Red Bull to participate. We'd arrange the circle, and time again, she'd remove Red Bull. We'd bring him back and talk to her about being inclusive, about not excluding anyone. Sometimes she'd keep up her silent argument for quite a while. She had no words, but she could remove Red Bull from the circle each time he returned. Other times, she'd choose just to ignore his presence in order to proceed with circle time. More recently, pretend play has given us opportunities to explain to her that a plush toy will be allowed to participate even if she doesn't like that particular plush toy. We don't exclude anyone in this family. Everybody plays. You don't have to like everyone, but you have to include everyone. Why, Mama? because we're a peaceful family, and being a peaceful family means working hard to include everyone, even if you don't always want to do so, even if they have scary teeth like Wild Thing or eyebrows that frown like Max. Why, Mama, why? Because it's good practice for you when you go to school or church or the park or the library, and you have to include other children you may not like very well when you're playing. Why, Mama? Because we believe that being a part of our community means taking care of each other. Why? Why indeed? Kailani's questions and my answers force me again to think about the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. Those of you more rational may not include Kailani's plush toys in that web, a choice I completely respect and understand. But if we want to respect and affirm the interdependent web, we're supposed to understand that our actions affect every living thing on our planet, including ourselves. And while I may be especially skilled at giving soul to Kailani's plush toys, I'm here to confess I have failed many times when it comes to giving soul to the living people, animals, and plants around me. I not only have a hard time loving all of you sometimes, it's hard for me to care a lot about chickens and cows, unless we're talking about favorite marinades. And though it has seen better days now, I remember falling in love with our leather couch, the upholstery from Italy, where they could, quote, do things to the leather there we can't do here in the U.S., end quote. Saul and I had no idea what the salesperson meant and didn't ask. I've thrown away glass jars because washing out the jelly seemed like too much work. I like using paper plates. I don't always rewash plastic forks and spoons. We never remember to take reusable bags back to the grocery store. Worse, we use one of them to hold our paper sacks and another one to hold our plastic bags. And though we try to recycle and reuse every time we throw out a small appliance, another computer, an old clock, I have to wonder, how committed are we to this interdependent web? Did I mention I keep the water running when I brush my teeth? Saul and I have long joked that we prefer to admire the interdependent web from a distance. In other words, we're not exactly outdoorsy people, which means we tend to avoid the very activities that might actually help us develop some appreciation for nature and increase our motivation to care for it. We've participated in Fall Walden, our church's annual campout and celebration of the seventh principle, exactly once, and we left early that time. As an introvert, I also tend to avoid large groups of people where I might help you become more real, and in doing so, become more real myself. Coffee hour, fracking protests, Summer Institute, our very own week-long UU summer church camp. I understand there is a lot of hugging there. Summer Institute is a big deal for this church. We send a lot of members to the district-wide event, and most of them come back from it buzzing with excitement and eager to return the following year. The countdown for next summer has already started on Facebook, and for the first time ever, when I saw all the photos and posts online after the week ended, I thought to myself, we may be missing out on something. Specifically, I was thinking Kailani might be missing out on something. She has a sweet little cohort of age mates who spent time together at SI this summer, and I confess, I was jealous she wasn't there to enjoy their company. I don't know if Saul and I will go to Summer Institute with Kailani next year, but I do know she's the reason I wrote this sermon. Caring for the earth, understanding our actions affect every living thing, giving and receiving soul from others, being a part of a loving community. These are lessons I want Kailani to learn. I may not be the best teacher, clearly, but I am trying. I once told my parents we spent more time in our yard in our first month with Kailani than we did in the 5.5 years we waited for her. As a professor of child development, I knew the physical and emotional benefits of being outside, and from the very beginning, I wanted Kailani to have those benefits. So despite our inclination to stay inside, Saul and I open the front door, step off the porch, and enter the yard on a daily basis. We force ourselves to expand our interdependent web to include the people, animals, and plants around us. Sometimes we play in the secret hiding place under our evergreens. Sometimes we roll out Saul's t-shirt quilt and sit on it to play with Kailani's animal friends. Sometimes Kailani rides her tricycle. Sometimes she plays with rocks in the driveway. If it's warm enough, she'll enjoy some water play. We live on a busy corner in Kent, so we're pretty exposed in the neighborhood when we're outside. There is no avoiding the interdependent web when we're in our yard, whether we're talking about our neighbors or nature itself. In addition to the passing cars, there is significant foot traffic on the sidewalks around our house. We say hi a lot. For an introvert, this is more challenging than it sounds. I do enjoy watching the squirrels and birds, and I like the butterflies and lightning bugs. I also don't mind the grass and the dirt and the rocks and the trees. I'm less fond of ants and mosquitoes. I know what you're thinking. No one really loves ants and mosquitoes, but don't they have a role in our interdependent web too? And how do you teach your child it's okay to kill a mosquito, but not okay to deliberately step on a beetle that's minding its own business? Self-defense? We do other outdoor activities as a family too. We take long walks along the river. We visit parks and farms and gardens. So we're trying with Kailani, but we could do better. I have another confession to make. I know sermons are supposed to include a takeaway message. When I served on the Sunday program committee, this was often the one feature we wanted to make sure was present in a lay-led service. Don't leave the people hanging. Give them something to do or at least think about when they leave. Give them some hope. Unfortunately, as I began to write this sermon, I realized I didn't have anything to give you. What message could I possibly leave with you regarding the interdependent web? Don't be like me? Many of you are champions for environmental justice, and others are really good at giving soul. I think it's all the hugging you do. I mentioned absolution earlier, but maybe forgiveness isn't what I really need, or at least that's not all I need. So instead of me giving you a takeaway message, I need you to give me one, or two, or 40. Colorful note cards have been placed in the pockets on the back of each pew. I want you to choose a note card and take a moment during the offertory to write down your suggestions for helping our family affirm and promote respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. And I'm already working on the teeth brushing routine, so you might want to write something other than turn off the tap water when you brush. When you've written your suggestion on your note card, please hold on to it until the end of the service. There will be a basket in the receiving line for you to place your card. We eagerly await your suggestions. Okay, eagerly might be a bit of a stretch. When I told Saul I was going to ask for your help, he said, "Wait a minute. You're not going to pledge we'll do these things, right?" So you can see what you're up against. You may want to start small, maybe include some baby steps for us. But I am making a commitment to, on behalf of my family, to try out your suggestions. That's all I can promise for now, just to try.
Each month, we take up a special collection to benefit an organization that works to uphold the values and principles we hold dear and to help us not just to imagine, but to create a world where those ideals can have real, lasting impact. As noted in your order of service, this month's collection benefits Family and Community Services Back to School Drive, helping low-income families in our community to purchase school supplies. Also, hold on to your suggestion cards until the end of the service. Kath and I have a separate basket to collect them at the back of the sanctuary. If you are a guest, we invite you to take a candle from the basket as our gift to you. The offering will now be gratefully received.
Last night, Sequoia the bear, Fig the lion, and Tiger Lily the tiger were vocal members of an audience at the debut performance of Flopsy the rabbit, dancer extraordinaire. Tiger Lily was very concerned about the accompanying music as it kept stopping and then starting again. Sequoia repeatedly reassured Tiger Lily that the show would go on. "Flopsy is a professional," he exclaimed over and over again. Fig the lion, a relatively new member of the family, was fairly in awe of Flopsy as she twirled around in her tutu under the bright lights of the stage. After each dance, she greeted the audience members with hugs and kisses, frequently asking, "Do you like my pretty dress?" Saul and I have been pretending with Kailani since before she could speak. She could point to Mr. Turtle when we said his name before she knew to look at me when someone said Mama. Of course, now that she does have words, she uses them a lot in our play. It can be difficult to discern whether the line she is reciting is supposed to be coming from the animals she is holding, or I'm supposed to repeat it on behalf of the animal whose voice I control. This summer, I have played zoo and boat and rocket ship and aquarium and countless other games involving Kailani's plush toys. It is hard to resist when she thrusts an animal into my hand and pleads, "Be him, Mama, be him." Butterfly Froggy, Lammy, Big Panda, Little Panda, Lily the River Otter, Allie the Bunny, Harry the Mammoth, Goldie the Goat, all of them have names, all of them have personalities, all of them have voices. At the end of last month, the church newsletter editor was hounding me for a description of our Sunday service. In my blurb, I mentioned the spirit animals pestering me to lead this service. I thought I knew the direction my sermon was going to go, but as often happens when I began to write, I was surprised by what emerged. Turns out I know less about the spiritual teachings of earth-centered traditions, one of the religious sources of our faith, than I do about our seventh principle. And so I confess, the spirit animals whose whispers I kept hearing weren't coming from the natural world, but the toy box in my daughter's room. Unitarian Universalism draws from many sources, and for that I am grateful. From Jane Goodall, "You cannot get through a single day an impact on the world around you. What you do makes a difference, and you have to decide what kind of difference you want to make. As I see it, you will have an impact on the world around you, so make good choices. But when you fail to do so, seek absolution and try again. Go in peace."